You must be able to tell the difference between a thought form of a particular person and the man himself. For if a master were to send you with a message to be delivered to someone living in a different sphere of the astral world from that in which he was functioning at the moment, you might be accosted by an entity who was antagonistic to that master and who, for the purpose of deceiving you, had taken the appearance of the individual you were seeking, really a thought form made in his likeness. You might deliver the message to this man thinking he was the real person. This might have serious repercussions on the work the master was doing at the time. Such impersonations are very common in the astral world, and you have to be trained to use certain power signs, which enable you to prove conclusively whether the person concerned is genuine or not. You have probably heard of vampires. They do exist, but fortunately are uncommon. They live under similar conditions to suicides. Both are earthbound, and you must know not only how to help them, but how to release them from their bondage. I think I have told you sufficient to show that you still have much to learn. I shall now pass on to your Friday night's adventure, when you found some difficulty in passing to the higher levels without having any focal points there on which to concentrate. I was keeping in touch with you mentally, as I thought you would probably make some such attempt on one of the nights when I left you free to experiment alone. As you found out, it is quite simple to get to any part of the astral world, providing you have a special landmark to use for that purpose. I do not expect I shall find it necessary to come to your assistance again in the future. I did not give you a focal point on the seventh sphere, for there is little there that would interest you, and it is not desirable for you to come into unnecessary contact with the shells existing at that level at present. You were indeed very fortunate to have the opportunity of witnessing the graduation ceremony, as I note you call it, in which certain nature spirits were changed into junior members of the Deva Kingdom. Nature spirits are of course part of the Deva evolution, although there is a tremendous difference between a nature spirit and a Deva. It is not possible to give you a parallel example in your evolution. Very few people, whether living in the astral or the physical world, have had the privilege of seeing what you saw the other night, and I am exceedingly glad that on your return journey from higher levels you stopped for a short time at the fourth sphere. I had no hand in making the opportunity for you to put into practice some of the teaching I have been privileged to give you in your experiences on Saturday and Sunday nights. Therefore, I can say without hesitation that your work was not only extremely valuable, but very well done indeed. In offering to pass on some of the knowledge you have to the girl Mary, you have of course taken on certain responsibilities. Also, it is more than likely that the astral helper whom you refer to as Jim will ask you again to help him whenever his organization is overworked. This will not only give you great opportunities for service, which always makes for good karma, but you will find that your interest in and understanding of your fellow human beings will increase a thousandfold from this work. The technique you employed in connection with the girl Mary and her family was in every way correct. You must not be disappointed if Mary does not react to your tuition and prove as proficient a pupil as I have found you to be, for as I have told you repeatedly, it is the intention which matters and not the result. Your efforts to will that the child Irene should remember on awakening something of what you told her during sleep were entirely successful, and today she is feeling quite different about the loss she has sustained. I leave it to you to decide when you consider it necessary to visit the family again, for they are now your responsibility and will only be taken up by others should you fail to give them the assistance that, of your own free will, you have promised. I shall now talk to you about the mental world. I told you that after a period of time it became necessary for all of us to drop our astral bodies and leave the mental world. The period of time varies according to our stage in evolution. A man who has had about 50 lives will spend much longer in the astral world and shorter in the mental than will one who has lived 500 lives in different bodies and in environments where he has had opportunities for intellectual pursuits. In one of my talks I compared the bodies we function in to a man dressed in underclothes, a suit of clothes and an overcoat. When death occurs at the physical level, this corresponds to dropping the overcoat, the physical body, When it occurs at the astral level, it corresponds to dropping the suit of clothes, the astral body. This leaves the man garbed in his underclothes, the mental body, and it is in this vehicle that he enters the mental world. As I have said, the mental body is the first body the ego draws round him in his descent from the casual level. It is fashioned of even finer material than the astral. Actually, it is the thought form of the individual. As you could not yet comprehend a description of this wispy, cloudy form which appears to lack all density, I shall only give you a physical comparison of the mental body of an unevolved human being, say one who has had about 50 incarnations, with that of an evolving human being, say one who has had about 500 incarnations, by likening them to a wicker basket as seen in two stages of the making, the early stage and the more finished article. In the early stages you see a basket take shape, but it has only a few strands of cane fixed to its base. Eventually all the gaps are filled in and the finished article is blended together of many hundreds of wicker strands, all separate and distinct from each other but appearing at first sight to be a composite whole. Each of these strands may be thought of as representing a particular subject of mental development, which has been more or less mastered by that individual. When a person has finished his life in the astral world, he passes to the seventh sphere of that world. When it is time for him to move on from there, he becomes sleepy, loses consciousness, and awakens almost immediately in the mental world. When, after his physical death, a man becomes fully conscious in the astral world, his first sensation is a feeling of well-being and buoyant health. When, after his astral death, he becomes fully conscious in the mental world, his first sensation is that of profound bliss and a feeling of being at peace with mankind. In the early stages he may not even realize that he has passed to the mental plane, for he feels so contented and happy there that he is willing to let well alone for the time being. In due course he realizes the change in his surroundings and once more he has to be taught, by those who wait to welcome him, the difference between the conditions under which he must now live and those relating to the world he has just left. Apostrophe The mental world is the world of thought. Thoughts are the only realities, they are things, just as much as chairs and tables are things, only, in the same way that the mental body is composed of finer material than the physical, they too are composed of finer matter. S. 153. It is quite impossible to do so. But if we could take any of our astral or physical matter into the world of thought, it would not exist for the people there. Such things would be more or less the same as thought forms in the physical world. They surround us all the time but we cannot see them, although they influence our minds. My greatest difficulty in explaining to you what conditions are like in the mental world, is that there are no words, which enable us to describe in detail conditions of consciousness, which are entirely foreign to physical plane understanding. At the mental level you do not see other people as individuals, nor as astral counterparts of physical forms, but as thought forms of the individual concerned, and these thought forms accord with the mental development of the individual. A man functioning at the mental level can be likened to a wireless set that both receives and transmits. The number of wavelengths, which he can use in receiving and transmitting, depends entirely upon the number of subjects with which such a man is familiar. He can receive on his set the thoughts of others providing he can tune into that particular wavelength. In other words, if he has some knowledge of the subject of which the thought is composed, and he can carry on a conversation on that subject, because he himself can answer the thought forms that he receives by transmission of his own thoughts, which would then be picked up by all other people having similar knowledge and interests. At the astral level you saw the intellectual giants creating beautiful music, pictures etc., and teaching others in the arts and sciences. When they pass from the astral to the mental world, they continue to help others who are treading the path, which they have trod. But at the mental level their tuition takes the form of technical and theoretical lectures sent out in a perpetual stream of thought. All of these can be picked up by anyone interested in the same subject. You can only grasp as much of the thoughts as by your own intellectual activities of the past you are able to comprehend. The parts of the thoughts which are beyond your understanding do not register at all and are not picked up by you, for your receiving set is limited to your understanding. If you had never studied such subjects as mathematics or chemistry, you would not be able to respond to the thoughts of them that might be all round you, given out by people who are you well versed in these particular sciences. At the mental level, the life is much more interesting for an intellectual man than for one of limited intelligence. Take the case of a person who, during his lifetime, has made a study of one particular subject. Here he would come in contact with other intellectuals who were masters of his subject, merely through sensing and seeing the thought forms expressed by them there. Because he was no longer limited by an inadequate brain, he would understand quite clearly not only all the things which he understood perfectly at the physical level, but the many things which in his physical life he was only able to realize in principle and not grasp completely. A man continues his mental development for a considerable time, not only to his great satisfaction but also to his great benefit in future lives as, through and because of the work he has done, he has earned the right to be given in his next physical incarnation a brain which will fully comprehend the knowledge, which he consolidated during his staying in the mental world. When I tell you that men of highly developed intellects have been known to spend as much as 2,000 and 3,000 years at the mental level, you will perhaps admit that for such people life could not be considered dull. On the other hand, the time that an unevolved being spends at this level is usually very short indeed, for he has little to consolidate and certainly his life there is not nearly as pleasant or as interesting as the lives of his more intellectual brethren. He does not realize his limitations, so there is no suffering whatever, even for the man of the most limited intelligence that you can visualize. When the egos that have been existing in the Golden City pass to the mental world, they still have only one cardinal thought in their minds, and that is their idea of heaven. Their religious teachers have taught them that once they have been received into heaven, they are there forever. They are quite sure that they have been so received, for they have been living under the conditions, which to them are in accordance with the promises of eternal bliss, to which they have looked forward. They expect to remain permanently in a heaven world and, because of this dominating belief, the illusion of heaven, as they have always imagined it, is created by them in it, where they live, exchanging their thoughts with the thoughts of others, sent out by people who are controlled by the same illusions. Thus the whole of their mental life is lived within a gigantic thought form. Although they are perfectly happy, they do not usually benefit as much from these conditions as others who use the mental world, not only for consolidating their own mental activities but also for adding to the intellectual knowledge which they possessed before reaching that sphere of consciousness. The people who live surrounded by their idea of heaven are radiantly happy and perfectly content, so who is to say that they are worse off than others who travel by different paths? In the mental world there are again 7 spheres of consciousness corresponding to those found at the astral level, but in this world there is no difficulty at all in passing from one sphere to another, whether you go up or down. In practice, however, you will find that the permanent inhabitants move about very little indeed. The average man finds his natural home, that is the sphere most suited to him and in which he will be most happy, on any of the first 4 spheres. Only the outstanding intellectual individuals go beyond the 4th sphere. Usually a man who passes from the astral to the mental world, aided by those helpers who meet him, finds his way almost at once to the particular sphere of consciousness that applies to his mental development. And there he stays, until the time comes for him to drop his mental body and spend a short time at the causal level, which is the permanent home of the ego. Before I talk to you much more on this subject, I propose to take you on Wednesday night as far as the 2nd sphere of the mental world, in order that you may get a clearer understanding of what I am now trying to tell you. You will then not only realize my present difficulties, but will probably find that if you try to report your activities on that journey, there are no adequate words to express what you saw there. I shall visit you again on Friday morning. This will leave you 3 nights in which to continue your experiments in the astral world, although I advise you very strongly not to set out with any specific intention tonight, but to give your brain a rest. Reserve Wednesday night for me." Acharya then left the room and I remained seated at my desk rather dazed with all this new information. The first night I slept peacefully and woke much refreshed, with no remembrance of anything that had taken place during the night. The following night I managed to reach Daphne quite easily. She had found no difficulty in returning to her cottage from the fairy glen, so presumably she has developed sufficient willpower to enable her to move freely from sphere to sphere. She told me that after I had left, an unbelievably beautiful exhibition of dancing had taken place in which the devas, the nature spirits and even the birds took part. When she made adieus to the chief, he told her we were welcome to revisit the valley at any time. She asked if she would be interested in seeing the Golden City at close quarters. As she was delighted with the idea, we there and then linked hands and reached the landmark for the fifth sphere in a very short time, having stopped en route at the fairy glen. The heavy gates which appeared to be made of gold were closed, but were unlocked and opened to us by an old gentleman who might have passed for the mythical Saint Peter. He asked our business, we explained who we were and indicated that curiosity was the main object of our visit. He did not seem to mind this and offered a guide to show us round. The streets seemed to be paved with pure gold, the numerous trees, which lined them, were laden with precious stones. These are thought forms of diamonds, emeralds, rubies, pearls etc. were very beautiful, but the effect was rather like an unending line of Christmas trees. I noticed that there was at least one church in every street. We were taken into what the guide stated was one of the smallest Roman Catholic churches. The sanctuary was a very beautiful piece of architecture, whilst the main altar might have been carved out of a gigantic pearl. A musician who was playing the organ was no ordinary exponent of the art. The guide invited us to visit churches of other denominations. I asked whether the different denominations kept themselves separate. He told me that in the heaven world the different sects led their separate lives and carried out their specific teaching, but that there was never any disharmony here, for everyone realized that the truth behind all doctrines was the same and only the forms of expression were different. In reply to a question I put, he stated that here God reigned supreme and from time to time visited the Golden City. He was not seen by the ordinary inhabitants, but his voice was heard seemingly coming from the cloud which encircled him. He stated that Christ and his 12 apostles still walked the streets teaching, and preaching to the multitude. I asked if he had not meant 11 apostles, for surely Judas would not be admitted to the heaven world. He assured me however that as Judas had paid the penalty of his crime by suffering terrible remorse and creating for himself a veritable hell, his repentance had been noted and he had been allowed to rejoin his fellow disciples. We visited an amphitheater where there must have been 3,000 people gathered together, all wearing white robes, listening to a choir singing to the accompaniment of harps and a silver-toned organ. They had the appearance of the angels of the scriptures, but we did not see any seated on clouds playing harps. We returned to Daphne's cottage where we discussed our experiences and later I met some more of her friends. On Wednesday evening I was waiting for Acharya when he arrived in my room on the stroke of 10 p.m. greeting me with "If you are ready, let's be on our way." We started off. We travelled by the same route as before, via the village on the second sphere, the academy on the third, the fairy glen, equals narrow valley, on the fourth, the Golden City on the fifth and the lake on the sixth. At this last spot I had time to see that two of the little boats were in use, one on the opposite side of the lake, and the second near the opening to the small lake. I had to look for some time before I could see any motion at all, so slowly did they move. This is indeed an ideal spot for a man desiring solitude. As I had not yet visited the seventh sphere and had no focal point on which to concentrate, Acharya told me to hold his hand. When our surroundings became clear again I saw we were standing on the highest point of a range of mountains which Acharya stated was called World's View, From here people would take a look at the surrounding world, which must last them until their next incarnation. Although the countryside was reasonably well wooded with plenty of flowers in bloom, there were no buildings anywhere and the surroundings had a bleak appearance. I was told that a number of ascetics and holy men spend a large part of their lives under these conditions. I felt pleased that mysticism was not the line which appealed to me. I noticed two people who looked like a man and a woman gently floating along a valley. Upon asking Acharya whom they were, he replied, "Let us go and see." We floated towards them. When we reached them, they did not slow their progress, which was little faster than a walking pace, and when Acharya spoke to them, they made no reply. I too put a question to the woman who turned her face in my direction but looked through me without uttering a word. Her eyes had a blank stare and the face expressed no animation. P158. They floated along on a route which appeared to be circular. My guide told me these were shells left behind by two individuals who had passed to the mental world. Acharya now explained that in order to travel to the mental world we must leave our astral vehicles behind. To ensure that they were properly looked after and not taken possession of by astral entities, he proposed to leave them in the charge of two of his friends whom he could trust. He concentrated deeply and after about a minute told me they were on their way. Almost at once two European men of highly intellectual and spiritual appearance floated towards us. After greetings had been exchanged, Acharya told them what he wished them to do. I was then told to lie flat on my back with my hands folded beneath my head. Acharya took up a similar attitude but allowed his right hand to rest on my forehead. He told me to relax and to endeavor to make my mind a blank. As Acharya predicted, I am finding it almost impossible to describe in words what the mental world is like. It seemed as if 2 or 3 minutes elapsed from the time I was told to relax until I realized that Acharya was talking to me, although he was not using words nor making any sounds whatever. I opened my eyes and found that an amazing stillness prevailed. We seemed to be suspended in space, but we were surrounded by all sorts of misty objects, which might or might not have been buildings, landscapes or people. Some of these objects were colored, but nothing seemed to be very distinct. All of them, even the forms that might have been men, seemed to be changing all the time. I did not actually see them with my eyes, but sensed them in a way which was quite different from anything I had experienced before. I could see the thought forms that were floating behind me as well as I could see those which were in front of me, thus I did not find it necessary to turn round and face a particular picture in order to see what it was like. It was all very uncanny, and I would perhaps have felt a trifle frightened had I not been in such excellent company. All this time Acharya was sending out thoughts to me, which I received just as clearly as if he had been speaking, and it was obvious that he had received my replies as soon as I had expressed them in my mind. He told me that this was the lowest sphere of the mental world and that it was inhabited mostly by entities of a very low mental development. He pointed out the thought forms of several people who were living at this level. They were wispy creatures without any apparent solidity. Many could hardly be described as concrete forms at all, for they were little more than smoke or cloud that appeared to take human form, but owing to its lack of density did not retain the same outline for any length of time. I have seen similar shapes take form when watching smoke coming from a fire, which almost instantly vanish up the chimney. Under these mental plane conditions, Acharya appeared to be a much bigger person than in either the astral or physical worlds, and he appeared clearer cut and much more solid in form than any of the other entities whose forms floated across my vision. His appearance in these surroundings enabled me to appreciate his comparison of the mental body of a man low in evolution, and that of one more evolved, to a wicker basket in the making and the same when completed. Acharya told me to come close to him. He placed his hand on my shoulder, although I felt no touch, and said we were now passing to the second sphere. Without any sense of movement such as I had previously experienced, the scene changed in the same way as it does on a cinema screen. Our new surroundings were not very different from those we had left, with the exception that the forms, which floated about, had a clearer outline. Acharya asked me to choose a subject on which I would like to have a discussion with one of the permanent inhabitants, and told me to send out thought forms into the ether asking anyone who was interested in this subject to get in touch with me. Without thinking very much, I chose the subject of comparative religions. Immediately, through the medium of thought forms, the reply came back in the form of a query as to what religion I belonged to. My thought passed back that I was a Roman Catholic, though not a strict one. The thought, which returned, was that all religions had their uses, in that they enabled people who could not stand alone to have something on which to lean, and in most cases they acted as a guide in the decisions which they had to make during their lifetimes. He stated that each religion had been started for a specific purpose, but that basically the truths of all were the same. This thought asserted that the keynote of the Christian religion was love, and in accordance with its philosophy, man could only evolve through loving his fellow man and by being tolerant of other men's opinions and actions. The religion started by the Lord Buddha was just as fine a philosophy as that preached by the Christ. The keynote of Buddhism was wisdom, and according to its teachings, the most important thing in life is to act according to the law of karma, through which men suffered or received benefits according to their actions, thoughts or words. The tendency of this religion is to eliminate emotion. The great religion known as Hinduism, which was revived by Sri Krishna nearly 2,000 years ago, had as its keynote cleanliness and orderly conduct. Its orthodox members carried out special ablutions at stated intervals. Islam, founded by Muhammad, has its keynote courage. Its followers certainly did not lack that particular virtue. Zoroastrianism, the religion of the Parsis, had gradually been evolved through the many incarnations of Zoroaster. Fire was its sacred symbol, and as fire has always been considered a purifier, the keynote of this religion is purity. Members even went so far as to say that fire must not be desecrated to light a cigarette or a pipe. He criticized proselytizing in any form and urged me never to try to change a man's faith, unless I were perfectly sure that man was seeking for something new and had lost interest in the religion into which he had been born. He said he could never understand an atheist, for no one could be sure that there were neither past nor future lives, but he sympathized with agnostics who were honest people, and only too willing to be convinced if arguments could be found to satisfy them. The pity was that they did not realize that most religious doctrines, which concern non-physical conditions, could never be proved by physical plane experiment. I would have liked to have carried on with other subjects, but my guide told me to end the conversation, as I had had sufficient for one night and probably much more than I could retain in physical consciousness. I asked if there was no music at this level. Acharya replied by asking which was my favorite symphony. I said I thought it was Beethoven's Choral Symphony, the 9th. He said, make a thought form of the movement you like best and you will probably have a surprise. Naturally I thought of the beautiful choral movement and, even as I thought, I heard the music, which I loved so well, seemingly coming from all around us. I listened, enthralled, until it finished with the final notes of that beautiful work. I do not think I shall ever forget this. The performance was finer in every way than anything that could be imagined under world conditions. The purity of the voices, and the perfection of the playing were beyond anything he had ever conceived as possible. Acharya told me it was no use trying to remember any focal point, as it would be quite impossible for me to visit the mental world again at my present stage of development. We set about our return journey in the same way as when we came, and after a moment I seemed to wake up in my astral body, still lying in the position in which I had left it, with the two astral helpers on guard. Both smiled at the consternation on my face, but I still felt exceedingly bewildered by what I had seen. They took leave of us both by bowing politely and moving into the distance. Shortly after, I woke in my bedroom to find that it was 3:15 a.m. I got up and recorded what was still clear in my mind. On the following night before going to sleep, I decided that I would see how Mary was progress, but when I got out of my body, I found Charles in my room. He had no plans to suggest, so I asked him if he would care to come with me to the London hospital ward, thinking the experience would be helpful for him. He agreed and we set off. Reaching the ward, we found Mary wide awake. I tentatively suggested to Charles that until she was out of her body, we might go to the third sphere and visit Daphne. The proposition had no interest for him at all, so we wandered round the ward still. On our next visit, we found Mary had gone to sleep and disconnected herself from her body.